It's Sunday afternoon and time once again for Wordplay. I'm your host, Jeff Davis. With me today, poet Landon Godfrey. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. And glad to be here.
It's Landon's birthday.
Yes, so she's So I'm here in full celebratory mode.
Full celebratory mode.
Oh, well, yeah.
That's a wonderful, wonderful way to do, poetry.
Yeah, indeed. Exactly.
Indeed. Well, why don't you read us one?
Okay.
We'll just delve right in.
Okay, let's just jump right in. This is called Vole. V-O-L-E. Oh, Vole.
Yeah, I like this one. Yeah.
Thank you. Vole. Our hearts, like the terrier who checks the woodpile over and over for years because once he saw there the shining vole. That path etched like chrysanthemum typescript by each naked pink foot. An enduring breath thump in the raw umber cathedral. Vol, 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 vol. And surely, if the dog could drive and were me, he'd cruise your house in the accusing flakes of moonlight, each refracted thread, a diamond-studded leash, a line of celloed quarter notes straining against the sky, a vole winking from the shadows. And surely, if the dog could spell, he'd see the anagram in his obsession, but if he were me, he would think it neither an obsession nor a coincidence, and he would do the moon's bidding, the monosyllabic body trembling, eager to open the body of another.
Nice.
Thank you.
Nice, nice. I was wondering how you were going to read the vole.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I you know, once I started, I got a little into it. It was sort of exciting to write it, too. It seems like such a dramatically wrong choice to make in a poem. But I was glad when it's typeset as a block. Mm, and
right.
I don't know, it just seemed like a good thing to do.
Yeah,
thank you.
Right. Yeah, you get the obsessiveness of it, you know, the terriers.
Exactly. Well, yes. I did ask my dog what he thought I should do in that. I workshopped it with him.
Good. And that was his, yeah. So this is a consensual, yeah.
He approved.
He approved. Good, 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 good. Is that a recent piece, or is that, does that go back a ways?
This is actually, yes, I've written, I think, one poem since I've moved to North Carolina this last year. I'm not a good mover, so moving states,
it takes me a while to
settle in and figure out where I am. But this is a recent poem. If you exclude this last year from the calendar, this is one of the last things I was working on before I moved here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Where were you living then?
I was living in Norman, Oklahoma for a couple of years. My husband was teaching at University of Oklahoma, and my husband, Gary Hawkins.
Yeah,
and so we were...
Who's at Warren Wilson College.
Who's at Warren Wilson College, which brings us here, luckily. Mm-hmm. Luckily, it's a big... it's fabulous here, and... Oklahomans themselves are very nice, but it was not my state. So I'm really glad to be here.
Were you in the eastern part of Oklahoma or the western?
Good question. Sort of in the middle
of Oklahoma, where it starts flattening out and
getting dry. Extremely flat, very dry.
Like Kansas, yes.
Yeah, so not near the Ozarks, and not near the south. Westernish, and then I guess down to the east it gets dramatically compared to the flat, it gets hillier and really pretty.
There are hills, right? Yes.
Yeah, but right where we were, it was pretty. It was pretty classic Dust Bowl.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, beautiful country in its own way.
Absolutely, it really. I know that it really speaks to a lot of people. It just didn't say very nice things to me.
Where did you grow up?
Washington, D.C.
Oh, yes. Well, that's a very different kind of place indeed.
Yeah, so I sort of felt like I was on the moon the whole time I was in Oklahoma. And people constantly said, "You're not from here, are you?" So,
well, no, not exactly. Right.
You know, if you want to experience alienation, or if I, you know, I didn't, but now I have, and you know, I can't recommend it as a.
It's not all it's cracked up to be.
No.
Oh, wild. Yeah. So between Washington, D.C. and Oklahoma, though, you were in Houston for a while?
I was in Houston studying at the University of Houston, and before that, Los Angeles.
Los Angeles. Mm.
And before that, New York.
Oh, so you've been in all the major urban centers.
That's right. Exactly.
Except for San Francisco and Seattle and a few others.
And yeah. I've spent a lot of time in San Francisco. I love it there. I've never been to the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to go sometime.
Beautiful country. Rains a lot, but lovely.
But pretty,
yeah,
I hear.
Yeah, very pretty indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. As long as you stay out of the, you know, you don't want to be in the forest for long periods of time. You sort of start getting mossy and so on.
But, right, exactly.
You know, but it's wonderful, yeah. Well, let's hear another poem.
Okay, yeah. Terrific. Why don't I read something about Oklahoma?
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Since that's what we're sort of talking about. This is called Oklahoma. Orange trumpet vine plates through scrub oak, and a chrome-green hummingbird labors at each fount, the two-way seduction rare, it seems to me. Red salamanders scrabbling over red clay, turtles sunning on helmet bevel rocks along the lake shore, jackrabbit fur, a doppelganger of dust. I hate this beauty. I hate seeing the stars at night, hearing cricket symphonies and owls hunting mice, and vague but vaunted qualities like freedom and privacy born of open space rather than resistance. The enormous sky widening into universe and place singing the song of place all day, all night. The only night I've liked here, when we were walking the dogs late in the evening, and a couple of blocks ahead we saw a man juggling fire, and when we got to that place, he was gone. That's the dream, combustion followed by absence.
Oklahoma, there you are.
Yeah, exactly. I'm grateful, actually, now, in retrospect, for living there, because I had to concentrate on sort of redouble my efforts to really look at what I was seeing.
Yeah. So was it a productive time for you?
Eventually it was.
Yeah.
When I first arrived there, it wasn't at all. I was really, I had sort of not only my usual bad ability to move, but I was really homesick, and I had never felt that kind of alienation by the landscape in my life before.
Yeah.
And so that really flummoxed me for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I realized that you could say, you know, mean, terrible, selfish, crappy things in poems, I started writing again. You don't have to make everything nice.
It opened new frontiers for you.
It did. Yeah, so I could be, I don't know what the right word is, but I could not be a nice person,
sure.
Not be polite,
mm-hmm.
not, mm-hmm. you know, have this kind of Keatsian desire for beauty, but rather think about it in terms of repulsion mm-hmm. and attraction, then I was okay.
Yeah. There are other modes of poetry, of course.
Indeed, there are. Indeed, there
invective,
are.
Satire. Yes.
Exactly. Right, and in fact, right. I've experimented with a lot of that kind of attitude. Figuring out an attitude and a stance for a poem was sort of thrilling, actually, eventually.
Cool.
One of the things that I experimented with in Oklahoma, sort of structurally for me, was writing a long poem.
So it's a challenge.
It is a challenge.
Right.
And so I'd like to read a poem called Pebble.
Okay, good. I don't think I've seen this one.
Okay.
So.
The first couple of words are Latin words for pebble, stone.
Uh-huh.
Get us going here.
Okay, right.
Okay, so pebble. Calculus, lapilus, rounded, shapely, one. alone but friended, kept in pockets, skipped across smooth platters of silver, blue, green, black water. An arrow with blunt tip and wide gyre wake. The idea of circle pursuing, like pack chasing rabbit. Greyhound, sleek, panting, flying, greyhound mob. More than field doubled, the violent math of loose cohesion, spun and spinning, like oranges flung, but encased in a burlap sack, off a cliff, separate trajectories hitting one target. Oi! Praise chased thumb twinner, ruminator, counter, scorekeeper, even-keeled balancer, jiggler and sounder of 7-8, tap, 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 silent aspect, a ruse, and the Buddha thing, a clever form of begging. Love me. We do. No, cherish me. We do. No, wait, adore me. Oh, baby, we do. You're everything. We're not. Praise monk mime with its monkey joie de vivre, all curve, heft, and lightness, dense little soul marker, escaped from garden duty, having renounced the civilizing footprint. So many grouped around a grass tuft, and voila, a Stonehenge, Versailles, Central Park argument, lauding something called nature. A form of now, filled with a whole lot of then, escaped. Praise, and write a postcard to wandering worn away, visiting ancestors all over the world, accretions, striae, cairns and mountains, boulders on pedestals, buildings, ruins, roads fine and almost frictionless, and those cobbled bicycle rumblers where bloody knee knows to count its blessings and be grateful for wounds that heal, because hungry dogs can mistake lump shadow for crumb. And that's not a potato boiled in a pot, is not soup for the starving. And throwing, tossing, pelting, lobbing, flinging, heaving, hurling, casting, slinging, nailing, launching, firing, can be graving. Battle and war, manglers of the horizon, a straight line only inasmuch as it stands in for one side of a coffin. Bless tiny earth double. Countless angels dancing on its ellipse, or one big angel crushing it under heel, but no. Arch bends up, foot surrounds humblest orb, now hiding in makeshift shelter, spared, not believing in angels. Whence the blind eyeball? Whence the hopscotch bob? Whence the mirrored fig without leaf to cover luminous energies? Whence the memento? Lying next to palm, the word caress, not undermined by saccharinization, for once all care and s. Tongue taking flight, tracing the arc of sibilance, a one-letter love song to a symbol of simple. Embrace this heat thief in hand, and it gives warmth back in kind. The illusion of symbiosis, like perfume, seductive, fleeting, but the thing itself a permanence.
I enjoy the fluidity of the transformations that goes through.
Thank you.
Yeah, nice long piece. Yeah. Does that come from Oklahoma, from the Oklahoma period?
It does, actually. At one point, once I started writing, I made a project for myself where I wrote consistently on a daily basis. And so I actually ended up writing a lot of poems in Oklahoma. And this was inspired by the notion of just getting out, because this poem does, you know, this pebble goes around the world.
Right, moves right along.
Yeah, he's out of there.
Come, let me sing into your ear. Those dancing days will come, all the silk and satin gear. crouch upon a stone, wrapping that foul body on. In his foul rag, I carry the sun in golden cup. The moon in a silver bag, I carry the sun in golden cup. The moon in a silver bag. Curse, as you may, I sing it true. What matter if naive, that the most good pleasure you. The children that decay, some were sleeping like a dump. The mulberry flag, I carry the sun in golden cup. The moon in a silver bag, I carry the sun in golden cup. The moon in a silver bag. Let me sing into your ear.
Thought it out is very day, noon upon the clock.
All that silk and satin gear.
A man may put pretense away who leans upon a stick.
Sing and sing until he drop. What a tomato hag, I carry the sun in golden cup. The moon in a silver bag, I carry the sun in golden cup. The moon in a silver bag.
Who's now married to the president of France, doing William Butler Yeats, Those Dancing Days Are Gone. Quite nice.
It's an amazing project.
It is. We'll listen to some more of this during the show. She does some Emily Dickinson
and some Auden, and it's Rossetti, very funny, but beautiful project. I mean, funny in a good way, project of making songs out of these poems.
Yeah, about time.
Yeah, exactly.
Why not? Yeah, how did you come across this CD?
That's a good question. I don't know. I like her, and I think she's kind of marvelous. Mm-hmm. And
have you followed her then, her career?
Well, I think she's sort of delightfully controversial. Mm-hmm. And so when she was fixing to marry Sarkozy, I was sort of interested in her. And I think she's been in, you know, she's been around my consciousness for a while. And I love this kind of sort of homemade quality that her French voice has. It's beautiful. And, I mean, I think she's multilingual, but she reminds me a bit of what's her name? Jane Birkin. And I'm a big Jane Birkin fan.
Interesting. What do you listen to? Do you listen to a lot of music?
I do. I have that thing where I can't listen to music while I do anything else. So unless I'm listening to some Bach, I can listen to while I'm working, or like Gregorian chants, I can kind of listen to. But I've been listening to Coldplay recently. I know they're very famous, and recently coming to the party.
Yes, right. I recently discovered Radiohead, who've been around for years.
Yeah, they're fabulous. You like them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're very good. Great.
Yeah, terrific band, yeah. it's having a 22-year-old son helps broaden my musical experience.
That's right. He's probably in the know.
No, he is. Yes, yes. The Shins and et cetera, et cetera. I can't even remember the band names at this point.
Yeah, you got to keep up.
That's right. I'm falling behind. Oh, well.
I never feel like I'm keeping up because I listen to a lot of jazz and I listen to a lot of the same records over and over and over and over. If I'm by myself, I can listen to the same record five times in a row and, be completely happy.
Right, sure. I'm still listening to Coltrane and Wayne Shorter and, Pharoah Saunders and people like that, whom I heard first probably in the 70s or 60s and 70s, given,
Yeah, I can't get enough of Prez. Yeah, I don't feel very cool saying it that way.
Oh, well.
But I adore him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's my guy.
He's good. Yeah. Well, let's... So you're beginning to write poems here now.
I am. Yeah. I am. I didn't bring anything today. I'm not sure why. Maybe a little shyness.
Yeah. Not quite ready to.
Not quite ready. And also I've been trying to go back into the painting studio. And so I've been thinking, it's interesting to me that some of the concerns that I'm interested in poetry, how to look at things and how to describe what you're actually seeing and how to figure out what you're seeing, all of that kind of I-beam
stuff.
All the
things that are working in the act of perception.
Exactly. Yeah. Those are some of the same things that I think about for painting. And so I've been thinking a lot about Cézanne recently and thinking, reading this beautiful book describing his work. Meyer Shapiro goes through and describes painting by painting a number of Cézanne's works and is really thinking, Shapiro's really thinking about how Cézanne is looking at things and then figuring out how to depict in paint these moments of perception. Uh-huh. And so I guess I'm writing stuff. I just haven't written anything down yet because I'm thinking about that same problem, how to be in the moment in the poem, and also how to tell a story and what structure, when to introduce information and what form, which is a lot to think about before you write a poem, and maybe a little too much, and so maybe that's why I haven't brought anything, because I'm still doing a lot of thinking and not...
You're still doing the background work.
Exactly.
The preliminary,
stuff. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's good. That's good. I'm sure that'll have results both for your poetry and your painting.
I think that's my hope, and these two concerns of mine have been married for a long time. I'm a big fan of the ekphrastic poem, looking at the work of art,
right.
I don't see a line between these two things. I'm not sure how to. I don't compartmentalize stuff. So this apprehension of the world seems the same. And if I'm thinking about the painting and working on something, I've been working on some paintings, then sketches for paintings, but in paint. This does seem like the same work that I would be doing for a poem.
Your language, yeah.
It does. I'm not sure that sounds true, but it feels true.
Yeah, and I think it probably is true for someone who's as visual in their imagination as you are,
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. I'm not sure
there's the whole visual world that you're dealing with. Your imagery is so present. Yeah.
Well, I take that as a big compliment.
Well,
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Meta such, yeah.
So I've figured out the difference between being asleep and being awake, but I'm not sure I've figured out the difference between making a painting and making a poem yet.
Well, one thing at a time.
That's right. I'm you have to have these little projects.
That's right.
I'll check back in 50 years and see, if I can define those differences yet.
Okay. All right. That's good.
Or maybe I won't try. Maybe, the not knowing is the best, it's a preferred mode of mine.
Yeah. Yeah. So is your painting, are you showing your paintings? Have you shown your paintings?
I have in the past. Yeah. And mostly drawings, mm-hmm. for some reason. I feel less uptight about making drawings. I feel less embattled. There's something, the sort of playfulness of the materiality seems... I don't know. I'm more comfortable there, and so I've been pushing myself to consider painting now. So I've shown drawings, and but not for a long time. Not since I lived in L.A.
In L.A. Mm-hmm. Wow. Hmm. So were you working as a? What were you doing in L.A.? Were you studying writing, or were you studying graphics?
I was doing a lot of things. I went to be an actress.
You wanted to be an actress?
Yeah. Right after I finished acting school at the Neighborhood Playhouse. And, that was okay. It's a little difficult to go on an audition and try to convince somebody that, for me anyway, I found the auditioning thing very difficult to show up and convince somebody that I was going to be able to carry, you know, the TV show or the movie or whatever. I was the sexiest girl in the world. I just couldn't professionalize myself mm-hmm. enough with the acting. So then I was writing for television, and I was a secret poet. I was doing all of these other projects and reading poetry, and which I had always done, and mm-hmm. writing secretly. And then somebody asked me a point-blank question, and I felt like I couldn't lie had I been writing any poems. And
yeah. Oh, no, I swear I haven't. That's right. I wouldn't think of it.
No, yeah, don't. Right. And then, boom, there I was. There yeah. I was. A friend of mine, Sydney Walsh, asked me, and she had a reading series uh-huh. there, and asked me to participate, and that was it for me. I was outed.
You're outed. Been there ever since, I guess.
That's right, right, exactly.
Right. Good. Yeah. So is your work as a painter, do you work in a figurative mode, or are you more abstract? Or
I'm very attracted to both concepts.
Yeah, sure.
And
they're not exclusive.
they aren't. And it's extremely confusing to pick a camp. And, I try not to find myself in any historical moment, because there's always the exception, you know, oh, painting's dead, except for this, you know, fabulous painter over here. Right, so yeah. I try not to intellectualize that stuff at all. Very difficult, because I'm attracted to the argument, mm-hmm. but whatever the argument is, I want to be in it. But, so recently, Cézanne has been a big touchstone for me with this question as well, because mm-hmm. when you really look at his paintings, they are realistic to the extent that you understand what you're looking at. You're mm-hmm. looking at
sure.
Cupid, a statue of Cupid, or you're looking at a tree. You
a tree
absolutely know
field,
that, and you really feel it, and you mm-hmm. you know, those apples are so mm-hmm. edible.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you look at how the paint is applied, you really see the materiality of the paint.
Right.
And I think that that's, for me, when I paint with any notion of abstraction, it's always about what the paint looks like and feels like. And I mean, you can't eat lead-based paint, but what it tastes
like—it's bad for you,
like,
right?
It's yes. very bad for you. No matter how yummy those paint flakes look, and I don't want to shy away from being here in this world either, being attracted to, say, a silver pitcher. So I've been thinking about still life painting and working on some pitchers and flowers. Mm-hmm. Pitcher, not picture. Mm-hmm. And ewers, to use the crossword puzzle mm-hmm. word. And but also trying not to fall into what Cézanne calls the trap of the bourgeois by putting the little glinting white dab in so that the sterling silver pitcher now kind of gleams in the painting and mm-hmm. fools you. He doesn't mm-hmm. like that, and so I've decided not to like it very much either, and mm-hmm. and try to make the paint look like paint.
Yeah.
While painting a picture of something.
Of something.
Yeah. So I'm in either hell or paradise, I don't know, with this little project.
And of course, as you say, that feeds into your approach to poetry, I think, as well. I mean, because you've got the revealed materiality of language, certainly, and yet there's something going on too at the same time. It's about, quote, quote, about something in a sense.
Yeah, I agree with that description. Yeah. I think that's really, thank you for reading these poems so well. Thank you.
I really enjoyed them.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you. Yes. Yeah, I do. You know, there's always that, there's always some kind of word that's just fabulous. And I can't start a poem from there, but sometimes you just have to put the word in. Even if it's going to skew everything towards that word, it's like a big black hole.
Yeah.
You know.
Still.
You can't, right? Sometimes you can't avoid it.
Yeah, put it in.
Exactly.
Let's listen to a little more, Carla.
If I make the lashes dark and the eyes more bright and the lips more scarlet, be right. From mirror after mirror, no vanity is displayed. I'm looking for the face I had before the world was made. I'm looking for the face I had before the world was made. What if I look upon a man as though on my beloved, and my blood be cold the while, and my heart unmoved? Why should he think me cruel, or that he's betrayed? I'd have him love the thing that was before the world was made. I'd have him love the thing that was before the world was made.
Once again, is Carla Bruni performing a poem by William Butler Yeats, "Before the World Was Made," and nice selection. She has, obviously read some of these for a while. I mean, been a fan, as it were, of Yeats and
I think she has good taste in this stuff.
Yeah. Well, you're listening to Wordplay. I'm your host, Jeff Davis. With me today, Landon Godfrey, who's a poet and a painter. Indeed. So is your work around on the web somewhere, Landon, where people could find it?
Well, like many people, I have a little I do have a website, landongodfrey.com, but yeah, and it has, you know, just a few links to projects that I've worked on as a writer. I work with people, helping people make websites specifically related to green energy and sort of environmentally concerned projects, and some projects with the arts, and I have a kind of poorly attended to little notebooky kind of blog, but you know, you're welcome to go visit, radio listener. But you know, you'll see a couple of drawings, and there's some, and I you know, every once in a while I'll write a kind of essay. I was very interested in, as I think you are, Jeff, in surrealism and and thinking about you know, what to do with it now, how to beg, borrow, and steal from it now. And so there are, you know, I have some little essays, but I just haven't gotten the blog thing down, you know.
It's not for everyone.
It isn't. I don't know how people come up with stuff every single day, and
I know.
You know, I don't really want to be a polite person, but I feel a little too polite to, you know, to sort of say how horrible the whole world is every single day.
Right. Oh, right.
Which seems to be a good attitude if you want to come up with something to write about, you know, every day.
Yes.
And now living in the woods, I'm not party to as much gossip as I used to be. Also, another good mode for the blog.
right. Yeah. What's left?
Blank space. Yeah. What's left? Sitting in front of the computer, not updating the blog, reading other people's work.
Well, is your work otherwise, your poems, for instance, are they about on the web somewhere, or are they?
I've, you know, they're showing up in little journals and magazines, and
some of which are online, probably.
Yes. So let's.
Do you self Google? Do you know where your work is?
Yeah, I'm out there. It's a little confusing because of apparently there's another Landon Godfrey in the world, which
is
shocking to
me. Really? How dare she? Good grief!
Actually, a he. And a he. He's so if you Google Landon Godfrey and I'm winning the, you know, the 50 meter dash in Missoula, that's not
that's
me.
Somebody else. Right. That's the other Landon Godfrey.
Yeah, not I.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Missouri Review was kind enough to publish one of my poems, Oklahoma, which I read earlier, but it isn't archived there. Hmm. So, you know, who knows what's out there? And I don't resent that at all, but, you know, it's I have no idea exactly, you know, how many of my secrets are on the web. I don't know.
Well, do you have any books out and about yet?
Not yet. Okay. I've
or
been
a chat book? No.
No, I've been dutifully.
You're certainly due for one.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
And so I've been sending the work out and getting some good responses from contests and
contests.
Exactly.
Ooh.
Seeing my manuscript sort of advance and all of that, but I'm, you know, I'm patiently waiting. Maybe I shouldn't be so patient. I don't know how else to do it, though.
You could always go buy a printing press and, you know, or you don't even need to do that anymore.
That's right. Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Self-publication is a long tradition in the world of poetry.
It's true. It's true. I'm a little scared of it myself, but...
pretty scary.
But I respect the endeavor.
Well, good. Well, let's hear another poem.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is a poem that I wrote in Washington, D.C. Last year, which is... I remark on it only because, again, I never think of myself as a prolific writer, and I'm surprised when I'm sitting in a cafe and I write a poem. I'm just not that. It's not who I am.
It's not your usual mode.
It isn't. And I was reading Merwin's book of odes that came out a couple of years ago, and I was very taken with his... I'm a big fan of his, but I was very taken with this notion of the ode. Mm-hmm. And so this is an ode, and it's called To Citrine, like the color.
Yes, citrine.
To Citrine. You flash bright, green bright shine, so even lying on the sidewalk, next to a marble pillar, you seem alive. Before I can pick you up, a little boy lifts your body. His mother hums hummingbird. He hums hummingbird back into the mirror of her voice. The sad sound reflecting off their tongues and off your jewel belly, which nudges the sun like a hill in a miniature landscape, painting echoing diminishing song. And off the tearless joy of eyes hearing your green fire.
Nice.
Thank you.
Yeah. I've been lately fascinated by the color carnelian.
Oh. So, yes.
That, when I read Citrine, it resonated for me.
Oh, that, good. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
There's something about color which is just extraordinary. And as a painter, one has to think of how to get color to be the color that you want on the canvas. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of different ways of, you know, a color responding to another color.
Right.
The notion of the optical gray, colors adjacent to each other, creating a third kind of perceivable color, for instance. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I'm also extremely interested in is the notion of the fugitive color, that there's certain oil paints.
The fugitive color.
Isn't that a beautiful idea?
I like that.
The fugitive color. It's amazing.
Wow.
So that you can put some paint on a canvas and we'll be able to see it for only a little while. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's relative to the scope of historical time.
Right,
I'm not sure what a little while is going to be. But, you know, it's entirely possible to see something depending on what medium you mix it with, what kinds of additives you put in the paint. You can see it yellow or blacken over time, or cloud and whiten. You can see these changes over time, but the notion of the fugitive color is even more beautiful and strange, I think, because color itself just cannot be contained by the medium and will do what? Dissolve into air over time? It's just amazing. It's amazing to me.
Indeed. Well, you're listening to Wordplay. I'm your host, Jeff Davis. This is WPVM 103.5, the Progressive Voice of the Mountains, and we're talking today with poet Landon Godfrey. So, and let's hear one more Carla Bruni.
Okay, yeah.
So, while I not promise you, keep we both our liberties, never false and never true. Let us hold the die and cast, free to come as free to go, for I cannot know your past, and of mine what can you know? You so warm may once have been warm towards another one. I so cold may once have seen sunlight, once I felt the sun. Who shall show us if it was thus indeed in time of old? Fades the image from the glass, and the fortune is not told. If you promised you might grieve for lost liberty again, if I promised I believe should fret to break the chain, let us be the friends we were, nothing more but nothing less. Many thrive and frugal fare, who would perish of excess? Promise me no promises. Promise me no promises, so will I not promise you? keep we both our liberties, never false, never true. Let us hold the die and cast, free to come, free to go, for I cannot know your past, and of mine what can you know? If you promised you might breathe for lost liberty again, if I promised I believe I should try to break the chain. Let us be the friends we were, nothing more, nothing less. Many threatened frugal fare who would perish of excess. Promises like pie crush. Promises like pie.
And that's Carla Bruni doing Promises Like Pie Crust by Christina Rossetti. Very nice. She has an interesting range of material in this.
She does. I'm not sure. I don't know exactly the whole story behind the album, so I don't know where she...
A lot of it seems to come out of that pre-Raphaelite movement. Even the early Yeats is... Very
yes.
much involved in that, yeah.
So, yeah, it's sort of evocative yeah. imagery, like promises like pie crust.
Right, yeah. Very nice, very nice. Well, you yourself are a graduate of an MFA program, is that correct?
That is correct.
Yes, yes, yes.
And, how would you say, an absconder, a departer? I didn't finish a PhD. I left without finishing. I know. It's all right. It's all right. I'm happy to be in the gutter.
Yes, yes. Yes.
I did an MFA at the University of Houston Creative Writing Program.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Who was there at the time you were?
I studied with the fabulous Ed Hirsch mm-hmm. and Mark Doty, Adam Zagajewski. I was very happy to be there with them.
Mm-hmm.
There were probably too many other people to say. It was, right. you know, it was terrific to be there because we had lots and lots of people coming in.
Like most writing programs. There
exactly.
are people, like every week.
Exactly.
Every week whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
Name
right.
someone. I'm
right.
sure.
They
yeah.
were there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Houston itself was a surprisingly terrific town to be in because people really love the arts there and love writing and opera and the theater and obviously their fabulous museums. So it was a wonderful place to be and
yeah.
to study writing.
Huh. I've never actually been to Houston. I guess I have that to look forward to.
I recommend it. I think
yeah.
you would really like it. It's not a beautiful town, but there are these wonderful things,
yeah.
these wonderful attractions there.
Hmm. I guess I've neglected Texas as a whole. I mean, the only part of Texas I really know is the Panhandle, the northern, you know, which is a beautiful kind of in a very deserty red ochre kind of way, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, then you'd probably like Oklahoma, too.
Well.
You'll have to go and report back to
us. I'll have to, yeah, right. yeah, I don't know. I've been across Kansas a number of times and didn't really enjoy Kansas as much. Lawrence is lovely, the Flint Hills and the eastern part of Kansas, but I think my experience of Oklahoma would be somewhat similar, yeah.
Yeah, you'd have to really, you have to search out the good stuff.
Yeah. Well, let's hear another poem.
Okay.
All right.
Why don't we, I'll read a poem that has three sections.
Excellent. Another long poem.
Yeah, a long poem. This is another structurally, it's not as if I invented this, but the idea of putting it into three sections helped me contain a lot of information that I would not have otherwise been able to work with.
Mm-hmm.
This is called Terminal Moraine.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. One, garden. Winds, lineations strip the trees, leaves boiling green to yellow, leafy steam rising to froth mate fleeing bird packs, southward and away. Relentless today, the dividing this from that, this from this. I cull roots, beet bulbs, orange tubers, yellow white fingerling potatoes muscled up like babies born fist first, bequeathed to cellar and table. Take this fare, glinting with good grease in candlelight. Sup. I saw my hands push down into the dirt, and the earth yielding, opening. 2. Terminal moraine. Blooming iceberg wake, rutty hills, mossed and toted, cragged in sunbake and moon swill, the elder siblings of rills and ponds and lakes like caverns filled with cold tears. These hills we know to name a la science or government survey, terminal moraine. Our child tongues milled by the whetstone of precision. And once, preceding my father down a sky lofty hill back to camp, after finding some mewling stubs under an oak, unripe kittens spilled from their mother's burst pillow body, ordered not to look back, I did. To see my father piling a cairn, each stone raised high, then mortared and pestled. Each just stone part of the hill. 3. Skull drawing. The slow revelation of black, cross-hatched, patient, digging up creation with ink and clutch of pen. First the plucked flight, swift but rude, then the nib struck twin by knife, blood nowhere, and ink, glint of future gesture, all potential. Think vanitas or natur more, and skull appears, sockets and bone pox culled from dark marks. Fuck it, cried a man, red drunk, salvoing his enemy with a knife. Blood everywhere, hic et nunc. Here is a life.
Nice, nice.
Is one allowed to swear on the radio?
Well, no. There's still these 7 words that one can't say on television.
I apologize, everyone.
Yes,
censors,
out there,
sensitive ears.
The great world.
That was, you know, that's just a little memory of George mm-hmm. Carlin. That poem is dedicated to him.
And by the time you hear this on podcast, I will have bleeped it out.
So. Ah, there you go. Then I rescind my apology. I save it for a real crime.
Right. Right. Oh, like invading another country. And never mind.
Exactly.
But anyway.
I have no plans to do that.
Good for you. Good for you. Oh, well, that poem obviously had multiple occasions. There are many things I like about that. And the little phrase, the jest stone, you know, I like that use of jest.
Thank you. That was the mot juste.
Mot juste, yeah.
Well, it's always, for me, this poem... I had to kind of trick myself into the narrative. I'm very attracted to the story. I want to tell a story, and yet I often feel some kind of guilt or, difficulty in...
About telling the story?
I do. I don't know what that is. But, I mean, maybe it's some fear of the, you know, misconception, the misunderstanding of what confessional poetry really is. And mm-hmm. But I don't know. I just think... Or maybe it's some kind of... shyness or some sort of notion that you're not meant to talk about yourself.
Right.
And yet, at the same time, you know, why not tell a story in a poem? It's a very good place for a story.
It's a good place, yeah. And, you know, occasionally poems have been used to tell stories. I mean, there is the whole Odyssey thing. And,
That's what I'm saying, exactly.
The Divina Commedia, you know, there are a few stories out there.
Exactly. And there's nothing I like better than being read to, you know, a bedtime mm-hmm. story at
yeah.
night. This poem I used as a way of tricking myself into it, the descriptive, impressionistic... moment segueing into the story based in memory, and then you know, blasting right into some kind of rhymed thing.
Gads.
Which is, of course, a process I stole right from Auden, you know, thinking, elegizing Yeats and starting with no rhyme and then ending up with rhyme. So not only am I embarrassed about telling a story, but I'm very embarrassed about, you know, rhyming a poem.
Yes.
But as I've said before on this show, I can't help myself.
There you go. That's right. There's some things we're just given to, and there you go.
Yeah, and I don't know why I would come on Wordplay twice and tell the truth twice. There, I'm very sorry for that.
Well, this is Wordplay, and we've been talking with Landon Godfrey. And Landon, thanks so much for coming in. It's been a real treat, as
Jeff,
usual.
Thank you for having me. It was really a pleasure to be here.
We're going to make you a perennial, I think. So
I'd love to come back whenever you want.
Well, good, good. Here's a little more Carlo Bruni.
Why the rose won't cold rain where sweet grass won't and clouds like sheep string of weather steep grey skies where the long walks where the long now I'd go to where your hair was. Now I'd walk where your hand was. But phantoms follow beneath the thorn. Your ghost where your face was. Where you face was. Where the rose